This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The 12th annual Sanibel Island Writers Conference returns to Big Arts on Sanibel next week. From November 2nd through the 5th, aspiring and professional writers alike will gather together to hone their craft through a long weekend of lectures, meetings, workshops, and much more. We'll get a preview of this year's offerings, and we'll speak with this year's keynote speaker, bestselling author Alice Hoffman. But first, in collaboration with WGCU-TV, all this week we've been featuring conversations focused on development here in Southwest Florida. Today we wrap up the series with a closer look at plans to develop the Fort Myers Gardner's Park neighborhood into an artisan district, including art studios, small shops, galleries, urban housing spaces, and much more. The idea is intended in part to attract millennials to the City of Palms. City Council members unanimously approved a redevelopment concept for the area last year, which extends north of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard between Fowler Street and Evans Avenue, just east of downtown. Joining me now is Jonathan Remine. He's the principal and director of landscape architecture for the urban planning and design firm Insight, which was contracted to develop the plan by the city's community redevelopment agency. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks for having me, John. Happy to be here.
And with us in studio is developer and one of Gardner's Park's most significant stakeholders, Jerry Miller, who owns several undeveloped parcels in the district. Jerry, thanks for taking the time to be with us here.
Great to be here on this beautiful day, Fort Myers.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. What would you like to see be part of this new artisan district just east of the downtown River District in Fort Myers? Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. Or send us a message on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And first of all, Jerry Miller, would it be accurate to say that, you know, you really began or led the initial effort among property owners, business owners, neighbors, and other stakeholders, you know, to envision this redeveloped Gardner's Park?
Well, I'll take partial credit. And also, you know, definite credit needs to go out to Rob Johnson of the Butterfly Estates, you know, Don Pate and Lee Scrappis at the Fort Myers Redevelopment Office, and, you know, City of Fort Myers City Council and Planning and Advisory Committee, because this is such an important part of town. And, it's been about 3 years, and we had a mayor symposium on walkable communities about 2 years ago, and that added some more momentum. And, you know, with downtown being such a great amenity to walk to, and, you know, with you know, some of the things we need, multimodal transportation, you can play, you can work, you can just be really close to downtown. What is it going to take? And, you know, Insight also was a big part of this and their vision as well.
Are we looking here to put Gardner's Park on the map and kind of much the same way people now think about areas like Coconut Grove, Delray Beach, or Wynwood in Miami?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Pineapple section of Delray, and I think John mentioned an area of Indianapolis, Broad Ripple, I think that was. Just areas of neighborhoods that are like, artist friendly, artistic flourish, you could say, with smaller scale homes, mixed uses, artisanal, and that was a big part. And we can get into a little later what has been done, what are the challenges, and, you know, where we're at right now.
And, you know, I know this neighborhood was initially developed in the 1920s, I believe. Do you know about the history of the name Gardner's Park?
Yes, and I'm going to ask Rob Johnson to call in. He's also, fantastic with his Butterfly Estates with so much history. But, you know, I think Reverend Gardner and his family were such big players in Fort Myers. They actually were the first ones to start the electric lights in Fort Myers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
First ice factory in Fort Myers. And Gardner's Park was a growing area of guava and limes, and really expanded a little beyond the borders. But there is so much history, and, you know, that's part of what people want, to maintain some of the historical character of the neighborhood.
And great to see a vision for the future and also, you know, a rich history behind it as well. Has there been any pushback from, you know, established stakeholders currently in the Gardner's Park District? And, But that, I mean, I wonder if there couldn't be a potential catch-22 for business owners. Like, on the one hand, if you create this new great art district, it's going to attract more people to the area, but it's also going to attract more businesses that could potentially be competition.
More traffic as well. We don't see the competition. Downtown has embraced us. Mm-hmm. And we see this as kind of a bridge, you know, to downtown into places like McCollum Hall, which we want to put on the map. And the Imaginarium, a very important project, I think John can expand on. So we're kind of a bridge. So we don't look at it as competition. But yes, there are some people in Gardner's Park that don't want seven-story, 10-story buildings.
Right.
They want to maintain, you know, certain height limits and density limits. And, you know, density is a big subject. And in my view, to make the areas more attractive to developers, you have to, you know, add more density up to, you know, reasonable amounts that infrastructure and concurrency, you know, can support. And, you know, and why we need the rooftops for the retail. One of the speakers at the symposium, Chris Leinberger, states that, you know, office space near the downtown core gets a 30, you know, big bump in, you know, rates, higher GDP. So, yes, we need the higher densities, and we're in my development, we're looking at now, we're looking at, you know, 3 to 5 story heights.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, John Romine with Insight, let's bring you into the conversation. First of all, tell us a bit about your firm and how Insight got involved with this project.
That's interesting question. So, you know, Insight, we've been in Southwest Florida since the early 2000s, and, you know, we have a different approach compared to most of our competitors. We lead with design is the way I like to put it. So, you know, understanding the balance between form and function is always key to successful community development and building. And, you know, we're full range of services, multidisciplinary firm, civil engineering, landscape architecture, urban design, urban planning. And, you know, it's been fun. Gardner's Park is an interesting animal. I believe Jerry asked us, he was talking to one of my former partners, and how can we make this happen? And, you know, so we agreed to go attend a meeting. I think it was Jerry and Rob Johnson and a few others from the property owners and business owners within the community, and attended a meeting with the city. And obviously with the downturn of the economy, every local government really reduced staff, and staff had made a comment that, you know, they didn't have time to do it, and it was going to take, I don't know, Jerry, you can probably say how many years they told us it was going to take before they could get to it. And we had a miscellaneous services contract with the city for planning services, and I said, you know, this is something we could help with. We have the capacity, we have the time, and the ability, clearly, to do this. And so from there, it turned into what it is today.
All right. And you know, John, can you maybe paint like a picture for us in words of the plan that Insight has come to develop? You know, what do you envision someone experiencing as they first come into the Gardner's Park District?
Well, I mean, yeah, initially it's just a concept. So obviously you have to have a concept and a vision in order to develop something and make something rich and they have the bones, as we like to say. They have solid bones, fairly well connected grid network, engaged citizens, but it would be a complement to downtown is how I can best describe it. It wouldn't be the same as what you see in the River District, but it would have a more urban feel than what it is today. So you'd have a nice mix of, you know, for Second Street would be the main commercial corridor. Obviously, you have Fowler and would be the main east-west corridor, and then you have Fowler and Evans would be your major north-south corridors. But it would be walkable, lighting, wide sidewalks, green infrastructure. So instead of everything being what we see traditionally of asphalt and dry detention areas or pipes straight out to the river, the idea of looking at low-impact development design guidelines would all be part of it to enhance the not only the qualitative experience, but, you know, some of the the functional aspects of the overall boundaries.
So you really do envision, though, this visually being different from the other areas in Fort Myers. Like, you're going to know when you're in Gardner's Park.
Yeah, and right, and that goes back to what Jerry was saying about, you know, the character of the community. It has a lot of history. It has a lot of uniqueness to it that I think is lost in other parts of the urban framework of the city. And so I think that it gives you the opportunity to make it different. And while it may be different, it can also complement what you have in the urban core of downtown Fort Myers.
Right. Well, Rob Johnson, who we just heard mentioned a few moments ago, owner of Butterfly Estates and another key stakeholder in this project, is with us on the line. Rob Johnson, thanks for being with us. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
So tell us about, you know, what you remember about first getting involved in this project and you know, kind of what you're hoping this can do.
Well, I mean, it's been kind of a lengthy project. We started in 2009 of kind of organizing our neighbors to get together and create more of a community type project. And our main focus was really kind of to really brand this area as a special designation within the city. And in order to do that, we went to, you know, our history and kind of looked back at the history of Fort Myers and adopted the Gardner's Park name, and that name comes from William P. Gardner. He was the second mayor of Fort Myers, and in 1886, he was very crucial in the development of downtown and brought electricity and water, and his family was very active in the area, but they had what was called a guava farm, and that was 22 acres right in the middle of downtown, and they were the largest guava farm in all of the world. So we thought it was important to embrace our history, and then just create, you know, a really great area to live and work in. And that really has been our goal, to brand the area.
Yeah, Jerry's just showing me this Gardner's Park. Looks like a seal. Definitely paying homage to that guava links to the region's history. Well, yeah. We're taking a closer look at plans to convert the city of Fort Myers' Gardner's Park neighborhood into an artisan district. Call in and join the conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. We're also on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. You can also send us a message on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL, or GCL, yes. I've read that the goal of this redevelopment, at least in part, is to attract millennials to Gardner's Park. John, have the plans that you've drawn up sort of taken that into account here? Did Insight's proposal look at, you know, market research regarding what millennials are looking for? And if so, what are millennials looking for?
Yes, it absolutely does take that into account. And, you know, millennials are looking for a lot of different things. And I think, you know, as they come to age, we're really starting to see that and understand that a little bit more in the professional world. But one of the big things that they seek is they're not after McMansions. They're after walkable communities with a wide variety of experiences. So they want to live, work, play, learn, all of those fun things in close proximity of their home. And, you know, so whether that's shopping, whether that's going to a park, brewery, eating, you know, a whole wide range of elements that they're looking. And they're looking for different housing style than what we have, or housing stock than what we have in Southwest Florida. Southwest Florida is very, very limited to what's available. It's primarily single family, specifically within the city of Fort Myers. It's primarily single family homes with some condos. And millennials, for the most part, until they settle down and have families, are focused on that mixed-use living environment where they maybe don't need a car, or maybe if it's a family of two, they only need one car type of scenario. So all of that is factored into the plan to provide opportunities for different housing choices, is the best way I can put that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would imagine if, you know, part of the goal here is to attract millennials, then it's not just looking at the type of housing that they want, but it needs to be affordable as well. And that's been a challenge, not just for Fort Myers, but all over Southwest Florida. You know, I know even the Lee County School District has, in the recent past, flirted with the idea of creating subsidized housing options for teachers whose salaries just, you know, make it difficult to find a place that they would want to live in and that they could also afford. So is that something that's gone into Insight's plans?
Yes. The housing conversation isn't going away anytime soon.
Right.
You know, Florida historically, housing becomes affordable when we have a market crash, and while it may be more affordable, there aren't the jobs to support it. So the interesting thing about, you know, Southwest Florida and suburban communities in general is the housing conversation is too silo-focused on the cost of housing. There's not enough emphasis put on the transportation element, you know, where are people living compared to where their careers or their jobs are. And so a lot of that's where millennials, you know, are more interested in renting in urban environments than they are in suburban, single-family, ranch-style, pull my car in the garage at home.
Right.
And never see my neighbors, and so that all becomes part of the affordability conversation. It can't just be what's the median home price in Southwest Florida. It has to be, okay, that's the median home price, but how much does it cost somebody to drive to work? So what's that disposable income that people have after housing and transportation and some of the other primary needs?
Well, Calusa Waterkeepers has reached out to us on Twitter. They want to know, will the development use any green infrastructure?
Yes. So the proposed street sections, and again, that these are conceptual, so the city would have to adopt them, but proposed street sections would include bioswales where it would make sense, which is, if you look across the country, Jerry had mentioned Indianapolis. Downtown Indianapolis has done an unbelievable job on all of their major streets in the city as they've redeveloped to include urban green infrastructure, whether that's rain gardens or bioswales, pervious pavement solutions, making streets instead of having streets have singular focus. So you know, in many cases we have our streets are designed as roads, so they're cars only. To make them not just multimodal from a moving people standpoint, but make them multifunctional. What part of the plan includes closing off streets for events and on weekends, so they're a little bit larger cross-section for the street, but they have more opportunities to hold functions and events and things like that. Utilizing some of the Florida Department of Transportation park spaces, they're not parks currently, they're fenced in water detention areas, but to repurpose those into functional park spaces as well, with better infrastructure put into place for the drainage system. So all of those pieces are part of good urban design. Obviously, when you're talking about increasing density and increasing buildable footprint, you have to come up with better and more creative solutions for how the stormwater and wastewater is treated, and so it doesn't just pipe directly out to the river as it historically has done in much of the city.
All right. And you know, Rob Johnson's still with us on the phone. I wanted to throw this question out to Rob and Jerry. You know, of course, anytime you're talking about new development, there's going to be voices, you know, voicing concern about environmental issues. What are some of the other concerns that you've heard perhaps from residents or other stakeholders that have been brought up as this plan has been coming together? Jerry?
I mean, from my standpoint, I can tell you it's almost been so refreshing to have such a community-driven project because there are a lot of active neighbors down here in Gardner's Park. So the residents have been very crucial in getting the city to look more at our area and the development of our area. So some of the things that they're concerned about, you know, is to make sure that the structures that are in Gardner's Park, because they are original homes, a lot of these original residents of the city, they retain their values. So a lot of them require a lot of work, you know, and to get renovated. So we wanted to make sure that within that plan that we had the ability to incentivize those structures. And a lot of the concerns that they don't want to lose that look and feel that we have here, but they also don't want, you know, very tall buildings, you know, over the top of their homes. And so density and height of buildings have always been one of the forefront topics of our meetings. But other than that, you know, we just want to make sure that this is a place that people are easily able to get to. And then that's part of the mayor's effort in downtown to make sure that it is a walkable community.
And I don't know if this could have happened without what happened with the streetscape and the downtown redevelopment, you know, with the brick lines and so beautiful and all the new restaurants that are going in. And the amenities, the things to do is just, you know, look at what's happened in Gardner's Park in just the last year. There's been a lot of new businesses on Thompson. I mean, I can name them all. But,
sure. You can name a few, maybe.
Well, you know, you have the Lap Theater, which is a really culture at the corner of 2nd and Woodford, which is fantastic.
And we just talked to an S. Trosbach on the show just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Great. And then you have, you know, Bobby Schwartz shop around the corner in Wisteria Tea Room, one of the top rated. Bay Phil, my favorite store in the area. You have the Lap, you know, the Needful Things, a new one on Thompson, hoping for that Gardner's Park to come there. You have a new furniture reclamation on Huff. You got Fowler Antiques on Memory and, you know, reclamation furniture place. But, you know, talking about development, I'm 55, and although my wife says I act younger than millennials, but it's still, I would live there. So, you know, millennials, but a mix of all different, you know, ages. I'm working on a development that has live-work lofts, I would say a West Indies, Florida-style housing, and, you know, smaller scale. And we're trying to fit it on, but be, you know, reasonable in densities and heights. But yes, there are issues still. And I can just real quickly, Fowler, you know, traffic goes through there at 50, 60 miles per hour. Rob can attest to seeing so many traffic accidents and people going the wrong way. Right. That's a major part of this, along with 1st and 2nd Street going back to two-way. I would say the majority of people are on board with that, and that's important for the connectivity of Gardner's Park through downtown and throughout the River District. And we are in the River District. Gardner's Park is part of downtown.
Right.
We're just a little, you know, a walk two blocks away. So, you know, as far as development that's happened, I got to give a shout out to Johnson Engineering. They were hired to help codify some of these things. Because, you know, you have a vision and then to implement it is the hard part. And we're working towards that. But some of the things already done, we've redefined artisanal uses. Now an artisanal use or craftsman could go in there and actually sell their wares. You would need the parking, but reasonable change of orientation of buildings. We've expanded neighborhood retail to allow more intense retail beyond just the corner that was allowed before. We're still working on heights and densities, but those will work themselves out. And those projects need to make financial sense for the developers.
Well, we touched on the recent downtown redevelopment, which, you know, is beautiful now. You know, but we also know at that time, you know, many existing businesses went out of business, you know, partially at least because of disruptions caused by construction. You know, is there any concern about things like that happening with this project?
No, because I think you're going to find these kind of pocket neighborhoods, we'll call them, and that was a phrase coined by Ross Chapin, who wrote a book called Pocket Neighborhoods. I don't think it's going to happen all at once, kind of like the downtown streetscape and then the basin, which brought the water into the Bay Street, which is very important, where the luminary is going to be.
Yes.
And then you have Campo Feliz. People are moving in there now, that pink building for 8 or 9 years. And, you know, God bless Robert McFarlane and Rebecca, you know, that group to do that. That's a fantastic project. And, you know, talking about housing stock, I mean, I think it comes down to attainable housing. And one thing important that was codified is you are actually allowed to build an outbuilding on your property up to 70% of the size of your original structure. So we have this this housing stock right in our backyard, pun intended. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something that, you know, LA is looking at, and they're right now allowing that. So you can live there and be a landlord to a little house behind your house.
And Jerry, I understand you've got, you know, properties you'd like to see developed with this vision in mind. Can you maybe tell me a little bit about the properties you have and perhaps what ideally you'd like to see there?
Well, there is a, you know, Fort Myers, the latest plan integrated downtown redevelopment strategy going on. And that's going to go on for the next, I would say, 6 months. And they're relooking at all areas, Midtown, very important, Gardner's Park, the urban core of downtown,
right,
and going east. So I envision smaller scale homes of varied housing types, such as live-work lofts. You know, people have home offices. It's, you know, with this high-tech economy right now, you know, very walkable. You know, Ann Pierce, who is a big supporter of multimodal transportation, she has a lot of input on these walkable communities and how best to connect. We have a great trolley that runs during the season,
yes,
downtown. We're trying to make that full year. Goes out to the Oasis and back. There's a spur to North Fort Myers. And thank you, Lee County, for helping support in the city of Fort Myers. And the ridership is up, I heard yesterday.
Nice.
So that's a great thing to keep that, you know, community feeling and just – we want to keep up the momentum. It's hard to keep the momentum after so many years, and
right,
and Rob will attest to, and John. But we're kind of hanging in there, and, you know, I've already had meetings with the city on my project. And I have to say that development services have been very, very positive. You know, yes, it's got to work with the water management and all these rules, but they were, you know, making suggestions that makes the project better.
Right.
So I want to give credit to the city of Fort Myers because they deserve it.
Yeah, John Romine with Insight, can you weigh in on that as well? I mean, what role have city leaders and planners had in the progress we've seen so far? And what role would you like to see them take in the future? I guess, in other words, what will we need from the city to really accommodate and accomplish this effort?
I think a lot of times there's a lot of conversation about incentives and whether that's tax incentives or whatever. And, you know, the most powerful incentive that local governments have is investment in infrastructure. And the redevelopment of downtown is a result of the city investing in infrastructure. So the streetscape, the new utilities, the stormwater, all of those things. That's where local governments can make a huge impact to spur development from the private sector. And, you know, everybody plays a role in how a community can grow. And one of the biggest roles, especially in the urban cores, that where the government plays a role, is on that infrastructure piece, that investment.
Well, we are, you know, coming up on the end of our time for this segment. But, Jerry, I wanted to give you the final word, if there was anything you'd want to leave our listeners with about this plan.
Well, we want exceptional architecture, exceptional design. We want to look back in 30, 40 years, and these homes that we're building and these things that we're doing, it's still holding up, you know. And, I mean, look at First Street Place. This is a project downtown, the first mixed-use project in a long time, and development's going to spur more development.
Gotcha. Well, we'll have to leave it there for now, but thanks so much to our guests. We've been speaking with Jonathan Romine. He's the principal and director of landscape architecture for the urban design and planning firm Insight. John, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Glad to be here.
And also thanks to developer and key Gardner's Park redevelopment stakeholder Jerry Miller. And we've also been joined on the phone by Rob Johnson, another key stakeholder and owner of the Butterfly Estates. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, the Sanibel Island Writers Conference returns for its 12th year. Next week, we'll get a preview of this year's workshops, speakers, and performances, and we'll sit down with this year's keynote speaker, bestselling author Alice Hoffman. That's just ahead. Stay with us.